Okay, well, I'm absolutely delighted today to have with us a lady who knows all about recovery from ME. She actually struggled with this back in the 80s when it was very much an unknown quantity and people were extremely ignorant about what was happening to you when you were going through this these horrendous symptoms. So first of all, I'd like to welcome our interview today. So welcome, Berry. It's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you very much, and it's nice to speak to you.
Just going to run through a little bit about your accolades. I know you've really got your career to a stage where you're doing all the stuff that you love, which is a big part of recovery, as we know. Well, Berry started her career in telecommunications working for what is now BT, and that was all due through the 80s, and subsequently then was working for a number of marketing consultancies during the 1990s. And in 2002, went full-time into training and coaching consultancy. She's currently now a director and co-owner of Jamberry Limited. I love that name. Specialising in management development for people in business. And so Berry runs courses in areas such as leadership and management, assertiveness, which is interesting. We've just done a session on assertiveness. It's such an important part of recovery. Communication skills, presentation skills, women in management and coaching skills, and also specialises in running experiential team building workshops, which sound fascinating. It's about taking teams out of their normal environment to work together in sort of a fun and constructive way, and doing things like cooking and drama and music, which I'm sure delegates feel a real welcome change to just sort of doing courses in, you know, in their own environment. So, but in addition to getting involved in training, also Berry works on a number of online joint ventures, including getmotivated247.com and achievemorelessstress.com. So we can talk a little bit about that towards the end of the interview today. And also, wonderful to have been a published author of your very first children's book, Lavender Moss. So that sounds great. So very accomplished lady we have with us today. So again, Berry, welcome.
Thank you.
What I'd love to find out, obviously people that are listening today are either trying to, you know, they're working out their own recovery and working with the online program, so we're supporting them through, and at all very different stages. So for some people they may be pretty much bedbound, and other people may be still trying to hold down a job but struggling with energy levels and fatigue, as well as some practitioners that are learning how to help those people through this to get to the point of full recovery, just like we're both there now. Mm-hmm. So it'd be great to hear about how it all started for you. Tell us about your health crash.
Okay. Well, it was a long time ago. It was back in 1982, and I got glandular fever. But unfortunately, it was not picked up as such. I had some blood tests, and it didn't show anything there. And this was just before Christmas in 1982, and I took a couple of weeks off. I sort of then struggled to carry on. It was Christmas time. There were lots of celebrations. This was the early 80s, so, you know, it was a great time for celebrating. I struggled on, basically. I just kept going for a while. Mm-hmm. And it took quite some time, really, before the real impact of what I'd had actually started to hit in. It was, you know, just keep going and keep going and keep going and pretending there's not really a problem. I mean, a pretty standard thing, I think, that we both come across when we've been talking to clients.
Definitely. It's that, we call that in our phases, we call that the denial phase, where, you know, where you've been a strong person and you've done a lot, you just can't imagine that you can't keep just doing what you've always done, can you? So you just do whatever it takes to push through it and push through it rather than listening to the messages.
Absolutely, yeah.
What did you, can you think of things that you did to sort of help yourself keep going? Because it does help people to sort of resonate with them and think, oh yeah, I did that too.
It was a very, it was an incredibly busy time that I was working through, and I was working in a really, really busy marketing department. Mm-hmm. And as far as I remember, and I say it is quite a long time ago, but as far as I remember, it was just making sure that I was there. If you know you weren't there, you felt you were missing out on something.
Yes.
And so you had to be there. I was managing staff, mm-hmm. So I was trying to make sure that they were doing their jobs. We were going through this huge period of change. Because during 1983, during that sort of first 6 months of 1983, was when BT was being privatised. Mm-hmm. So we were turning from being post office telecommunications, part of this government process, if you like, into this private company. And there was just so much change going on. It was just, you know, keeping going, and trying to get other people to help you keep going as well.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I mean, I know for a lot of people that obviously on the program that we talk to, and I can remember myself, there's a lot of self-medication goes on at this stage, usually, you know, whether that's
I think because I didn't know what I'd got, I wasn't quite sure what to medicate myself with, if you know what I mean.
It tends to be things like, you know, I think for me it was Lucozade. It was anything that tried to make me feel a bit better, you know, painkillers and things, you know, things. Because I don't know about you, but I certainly had, your sleep gets affected quite badly when you start to break your health down, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, I certainly kept wanting to, I mean, I was forever just wanting to go to sleep.
Yes.
And that was quite a problem. And I remember having real problems with focusing.
Yes.
Being a, you know, my concentration, and it still affects me now.
Yes.
If I get tired, my concentration
yes.
goes.
Yes.
And I lose words.
Yes.
Which is immensely frustrating.
I know, especially as being a trainer, I know exactly what you mean. But that is just that, I think that's kind of the residue that keeps you, you know, at our stage, you're tapped in completely now, and you know that that's your little warning, don't you?
Yes, I mean, I've, you know, over the years, I've learned to what are the warning signs, what are the points at which I have to say, oh, hang on a minute,
yes.
you know, I'll just take a break here and go away and look after myself before I can look after other people.
Definitely. So how long do you think you've been having symptoms before it came to a point where you had to stop?
Well, I kept going for probably about 6 to 8 months. And I seem to remember getting into the summer of 1983. And as I said, that was the year that it was being privatised. So it was incredibly busy. We were trying to get this organisation ready for flotation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember the flotation of BT, but it was the first one of those really big privatisations. There were sort of huge political consequences around it, all sorts of things. And
pressure by the sounds of it then.
It was incredibly pressured, and it was made worse by the fact that we had a number of vacancies in the organisation, the bit of the organisation I was in. I think we had other people off sick as well. And I know I sort of at one point sat and thought, I think I'm actually trying to cover 7 different jobs here.
Yeah.
And I literally got to the stage of I was sitting in a meeting with somebody thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here. I have absolutely no idea why I'm here and what is supposed to be happening.
Mm.
And virtually getting to the point of collapse.
Yeah.
And that was quite scary.
Yes, it is, isn't it? And I think that is the point where it can't be ignored anymore, can it? I think, you know, I think it's pretty usual for you know, the A-type personality, the people that are sort of succumb to this, will just keep going and going and going, because there's almost there's all this thing about not wanting to let people down. There's, you know, and if you've always operated at a fairly high achievement level as well, it's just so completely outside of who you are or your remit to be able to admit defeat, isn't it? And
yeah, I mean, I think that was anymore. Probably one of the real difficulties was to sit back and say, hang on a minute, I can't keep going like this. I am going to, if I don't stop, I'm going to let people down in other ways.
Yes.
I'm going to start making a lot of mistakes,
mm-hmm.
Which is worse in a way than not being there.
Exactly. So obviously that went on for about sort of 6 to 8 months, and then you were in that meeting that day and it kind of came to a head. You realised that you just weren't functioning.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of impact did that have on you?
Um, all sorts of things like panic that I was so involved in what was going on that I had to just let it go and walk away.
Yeah.
That I had to rely on other people to pick it up and make it happen. It then got to a stage where I was off sick for about 3 months, and I couldn't walk for more than about 10 minutes without having to sit down.
Yeah.
I wasn't bed bound as such, but I didn't go out of the house very much. So that was incredibly frustrating. I couldn't, I remember trying to go into work, getting on the train, and travelling into London, and the motion of the train making me feel ill, making me feel sick, and also being in the car and the motion making me feel ill and affecting my balance. And I think because my glands were so swollen, that it was affecting all the sort of balance in the ears and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So it was, in many ways, I've been relatively lucky compared with other people. I wasn't bedbound, but I was sick for about 3 months, and then I worked part-time for 3 months. But it was, I suppose, made difficult by the fact that nobody knew what was wrong.
Yes, yeah. I was going to say to you, you know, what did you get a diagnosis or anything?
No, not really.
As usual.
I went to people thought I got flu. People thought, the doctor thought I might have glandular fever, but all the blood tests I had, and I had a lot of blood tests, all kept coming back negative.
Yes, they do.
It was only later that I found out that this is actually quite normal.
Yes.
But at the time, they don't tell you that.
No, that's right.
So that was really frustrating.
So what about people around you? Because a big fear, isn't it, when you have to step back, when you've been that person that's led and managed and taken control. And, you know, what was the response from those around you?
Mixed, I suppose. I mean, I think people at work thought, well, initially they thought, well, you're just off sick, you know, and you'll be back in time and things like that. I remember I did end up having a visit from the occupational health at one stage to check that I wasn't malingering, which was that was quite interesting.
Yeah, all you need when you're feeling that poorly, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I was extremely lucky. My first husband at the time actually was very, very supportive, and he was really good. And he helped me in a number of different ways. And in particular, I mean, one of the issues I had was dealing with the doctor. The doctor, because they couldn't find anything wrong, and the illness was not recognised, it didn't have a name. And I remember going to the doctor and getting very, very frustrated about the fact that I couldn't get any response. I couldn't get anything back from them. And it wasn't until 3 or 4 years later when I read an article about Claire Francis.
Yes.
The yachtswoman who sailed single-handed around the world. And she had the same symptoms.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting and reading this article several times because there were just so many symptoms. I'd had so many things wrong with me, all of which had been treated as individual ailments.
Yes. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Not as a complete illness.
No.
And I eventually took, I changed doctors because I'd got fed up with the first one for a whole variety of reasons. But I took this article to the new doctor I got and said, that's what I've got. I know that's what I've got. Now what do I do next? Where do I go from here? I eventually got myself referred to St. Thomas's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a specialist there. And he did one blood test, which shown that I had the virus Epstein-Barr, which is one of the causes of glandular fever, and said, yes, you've got this thing called ME. That was just a sort of revelation, really. It was that somebody was finally saying, yes, there's something wrong with you.
It's that double-edged sword, isn't it, though? They kind of, you feel relieved that at last you're being taken seriously and you've got your diagnosis. But it is a little bit about, it's kind of like goodbye and good luck, isn't it? I don't know about for you, but you kind of then go home and think, well, now what do I do?
Well, to be fair, he was extremely good as a specialist. He gave me various different drugs, which I was then on for a while, to help with the, basically, it one of the things, the side effects of ME is it affects the central nervous system.
Yes.
And so he gave me various drugs which helped calm that down and let my body then recover.
Yeah, it's anything that helps you access a healing state, really, isn't it? So that
yes.
the body can then heal, because of the immense amount of frustration and that not knowing, isn't it, that causes so much. I think it really does inhibit people getting better because you don't know what's wrong with you for so long.
That's right, yes. Because you can't put your finger on it.
No, that's it. And if they can't either, and the tests, and when everyone says to you, your tests are fine, it is, you know, I'm sure people listening can relate to that frustration because they've been there. What was the worst point for you, Berry?
The worst point was fairly early on when I went to the original doctor, and having had these various different blood tests, he said, okay, well, I don't think there's anything actually physically wrong with you. I think it's psychological. And I want you to go and see a psychologist. And I remember sitting in his surgery crying, going, but there's nothing wrong with me. And what I eventually did was I said I'd send my husband in to talk to him and to get his backup to say, actually, no, I don't think it is psychological. I think there is something physically wrong, which he did.
Yes.
He went in and talked to the doctor. But the fact that I had to do that,
yes,
that's one reason why I changed doctors, because I felt so frustrated that I couldn't get taken seriously. So when I eventually got this thing from St. Thomas's about 4 years later, this is 4 years down the line, mm-hmm. I was in tears when I got the letter. He, you know, I've got it in writing. I wanted to frame it and put it on the wall to say, you know, yes, I've got something wrong with me, and it's real.
It's real. That's right. So thinking back, you know, prior even to the glandular fever, what do you think sort of triggered your health problems?
I've always had problems with sort of throat, ear, nose and throat, you know, stand, you know, as a child, I always had problems with tonsillitis, things mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my weak spot.
Yeah.
And it meant that whenever I got overtired, that's where it would affect me. And so, as I say, we were going through this period of change and I was getting quite stressed. And overtired and pushing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it was 80s and everybody was really sort of pushing, everything was changing. So it's a very exciting time, but a very heady time as well.
It was really an adrenaline filled time, wasn't it? It was a lot.
Everybody
at both ends. And
yeah, you felt that, you know, if you were in, I mean, I was very ambitious as a, you know, I was in my mid-20s and I was really ambitious. I was working in a very male-dominated environment as a young female and having to prove myself the whole time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was just that constant pushing and saying, yes, I'm going to do this and I'm going to succeed and I'm going to show everyone that I can do this.
So it's It's so sort of relevant because on our program we talk about the six phases of recovery, and on there's that initial phase where we don't really know what's going on and we kind of think it's all going to be all right, and so we carry on pushing ourselves. And then there's the crash phase, which you've talked about, and then coming into that phase where we say phase three is kind of the external search, really, where initially, you're looking outside of yourself for the answers. You know, you're looking at doctors, you're looking at practitioners, you're trying to get somebody to sort of say, look, this is what's wrong and this is what, you know, what you need to do. And it sounds like you kind of went through all that and you got some help as well.
Mm-hmm.
The next phase we talk about is kind of like the internal search, where you start to look at your life and where your responsibility lies in terms of, you know, what do I need to change to make sure that doesn't happen again? So that there's a real sense of taking responsibility for how we look after our own bodies and emotions and things. So with that in mind, what changes did you actually make during your recovery?
I had to stop doing a lot of things. I think that was the main thing in a way, or that, you know, it's that recognition that actually, no, you've got to stop and take stock.
Yeah.
And then from there, I remember I didn't go out for 3 or 4 months. I stopped drinking alcohol completely because my body just couldn't process it at the time. I had to stop pushing myself to achieve. I couldn't take any exercise at all, because any exercise would make the body feel so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, when I got to a certain stage, then doing gentle exercise actually then helps build your body back up again. But it's knowing where and when to do that. And that can be quite difficult, because that's about you starting to understand your own body rather than necessarily being told by somebody outside. So it is about listening to your own body, listening to what happens when you do something.
Yes, so it's really getting back in, sort of reconnecting back to yourself. Because I think children, we're born with that natural innate, you know, we stop eating when we've had enough, and, you know, we sort of play, and, you know, I think it's throughout our lives that we start pushing ourselves to be being things that, you know, being certain ways for certain people. And we stop being our real selves, really, don't we?
Mm, yes. So it's going back to thinking, well, actually, what do I want out of life? How am I going to get there? And being comfortable with that without having to take, external influence maybe on it in quite the way that perhaps one tends to do, particularly early on in your career.
Yeah, so it's always that multifaceted approach, isn't it? That, you know, you kind of change what you're putting inside your body. So you look at things like alcohol consumption and maybe your nutrition and, and sort of exercise. And the things that stress you particularly, because we've all got our own responses to different stressors, haven't we? So it sounds like you really did a stock take and learned about you.
What? Yes, I mean, it was a stock take over a period of years.
Yes, it's not.
I think that's the other thing to recognise. It's not a question of, am I going to sit down this afternoon and decide something? It actually takes quite a long time for you to get to that understanding.
Well, because also you know that's a big reevaluation of your values, isn't it? So it's looking at what, you know, what is most important to you, and where are you going to spend your energy, and, you know, also looking at those. I think those patterns that run us, like the, you know, why are we ambitious? Why are we perfectionists? You know, what is actually really driving that behaviour? And I think it's only time and learning about yourself that helps you to make better choices.
Yes, I mean, it's also part of, I suppose I still feel it's part of the growing up process as well. I still think I'm growing up. You know, I'm not sure that I've actually grown up yet.
That's it, because we always think we can push it. You know, I know one of the most common things, and again, going back to the phases, we move into that sort of internal search where we do all that re-evaluation. And then there's like the relearning phase where, of course, when you start to feel better, I don't know if this happened to you, but it certainly happened to me and happens to most people I talk to. When you do get that energy back or start to feel better, of course, you've got all that years of conditioning of pushing yourself. So because it's easy to just push a little bit too hard and start having some relapses and things happen.
That's right. Yes, you're very tempted to say, oh, I feel better today. Right. I'm going to go off and do what I normally do.
Yeah. And also, it's what we would have fitted in a normal day is probably ridiculous amounts. And I know when you said you were doing the work of 7 people, personally, I did a stock take when I, you know, with what led up to my illness, and I was doing, I often say, you know, I wrote everything down that I was doing on pages of A4, and it was a 6-person job.
Yeah.
So it's just why we think that's normal. I have no idea, but we do at the time. It's just incredible. And yet, you know, one of the things again on the program we talk about is finding role models that don't live like that is a very good strategy, isn't it? Looking at people that perhaps you thought before were a bit slow or a bit lazy, and realizing that they're, you know, they really do have much more balance and take care of themselves much better than we did.
Yes, I think it is about finding role models. I mean, I suppose I've come to some of this quite sort of later, because I don't think there were role models in that respect around at the time that I was looking. They probably were. I just probably didn't recognise them at the time. But I certainly remember people at work who I who were very good mentors. I had some excellent mentors where I was working, and that was really, really helpful.
Yes, yeah. You do need to have somebody who's not performing the way you do.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, you know, my daughter's always had a much more gentler pace of life, and I used to think, oh, God, get a move on, you know, because I just could never reconcile how slowly she did things. But she will never have that illness, and she's a very balanced person who gets everything done, but in her own way, you know.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good one for me. So what for you, sort of what helped the most in your recovery process?
There were two things that helped me, sort of very practical things that helped me. The first was homeopathic belladonna.
Uh-huh.
Which I found, because it was glandular fever based, I found it helped reduce the swelling in the glands. And it was one of the few things that, you know, when everything sort of blew up, and it's amazing the number of glands you've got in your body when they all hurt,
yeah.
Would actually help reduce the swelling. And so I used that quite a lot. The other was the drug that was given to me by the specialist at St. Thomas's Hospital, which was a drug called amitriptyline. It's not a very popular drug now, but it's used to suppress the central nervous system, and that allowed my body to recharge its batteries. It gave me that sort of, I took it for about 6 months, and it gave me just that time to sort of really kick back in, and although it slowed me down to start with, it just relaxed everything, and that allowed me to regrow myself in a way.
Yeah, it's whatever it is for you, it has to be something that brings the body to that state where it can heal, doesn't it?
Yes.
So it sounds
yes.
like that worked really well for you. What about relapses? What triggered, you know, those relapses for you when you perhaps did overdo it? What was it?
Whenever I got overtired,
yeah,
or had a really bad cold or flu or anything like that, any sort of illness would seriously slow me down. I have got other things that have occurred which I think were triggered by having had the illness. So, for example, I now have a thyroid problem.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty certain that was triggered by having had that illness.
Oh, certainly. Thyroid and adrenals are always affected by this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to be careful about my blood sugar levels, which, again, that was something else I found, that I'd get very, very tired and I would need something to eat
yeah.
to bring my blood sugar level up. So I have to be a bit careful about keeping that on an even keel.
Yeah.
Those were the sorts of things that really triggered me, was really just getting tired, just overdoing it, pushing myself too hard, overdoing exercise. Massage was another thing. I remember going and having a full body massage because I thought, oh, you know, that made me feel absolutely wonderful. And I was off sick for a week afterwards.
Yeah, that happened to me. And I had an aromatherapy. Isn't it weird how,
mm-hmm.
yeah, for other people, it really helps, but the worst thing I could have done.
Yes, it obviously overstimulated all yeah. the adrenal glands.
Yes.
And they just couldn't cope. They went, ugh, no, I don't want to do this.
No, it's just incredible, isn't it? And, you know, that's why practitioners are so keen to learn about this, because obviously every practitioner thinks that their specialism is going to aid, you know, someone suffering. But in certain specific cases, there are some things that can exacerbate it. And it's only a bit trial and error, really, isn't it?
It is, and so I would say to anybody who's in that position, who's thinking about doing something like a massage, is start with a simple one and work up to, you know, don't go for the full body massage yeah. in one go, because if you do overstimulate, you know, it can just set you back and you just feel rough.
It's all part of that personality thing, though, isn't it? We wouldn't dream of just going having an arm massage, would we? It's all or nothing. I want the works. You know?
Absolutely.
No. So, when we talk to those that have recovered, without exception, they look back on their illness and kind of describe it as a gift. Is this the case for you, Berry?
I didn't see it as a gift at the time. I was in my 20s and I was very ambitious, as I said, and working in this very high-pressure environment. And so I suppose what I learnt from it was patience, and how to slow down, and the importance of listening to your body, listening to your subconscious, using ways of calming you down. You know, I do things like I listen to tapes, all sorts of things like that. So from that point of view, yes, it's in the longer term, it's given me much more control over myself.
Yes.
But at the time, I felt very angry about it. Maybe partly because I couldn't put a label on it to start with. It did get labelled in the late 80s as yuppie flu, which, you know, it's a bit like the way people label man flu.
Yeah.
It's not real. It's just people imagining it. So it took me a long time to get to a stage where I felt actually this was probably a useful thing rather than a bad thing. It wasn't an overnight sort of decision on that.
Well, I think while you're going through it, of course, that there's the why me part of it, isn't there? When you look around at other people that are doing the same kinds of things, burning the candle at both ends and, you know, doing a lot, and yet they seem to get away with it.
Yes.
However, you know, you were stopped. And so I think it's about searching for, you know, where did I get off track? Why have I been stopped? What am I supposed to be doing, isn't it, sometimes with this?
Yeah, so it is. It's sort of, you know, as you say, why me? Why have I ended up in this situation? It's that, you know, you go through all sorts of different phases where you get very angry about it and then you come to some acceptance.
Yes.
And then you can move on.
Definitely. So, obviously in a completely different situation now, and in terms of the work that you do, is it at all to do with what you were doing before, or has that completely changed?
It's given me, what it's given me is a real understanding of the impact of stress on people and how it can affect them, and how if they don't look at their whole life, and that includes their diet and their exercise and everything that they're doing, how that can really affect them both in the short and the longer term. So some of the work that I do now is where I do coaching, particularly stress-related coaching, and helping people actually stop and think about, you know, what is this really for me? Am I really doing what I want to do? And how can I get myself out of this difficult situation that I might have found myself in?
So, a big part of the journey, I believe, is finding your purpose as well, isn't it? So, and often I think ME does serve you with an opportunity to be able to, teach others at some point in some capacity. And pretty much everybody that we meet tends to go on to do something different from what they did before, and always bring to whatever it is they're doing that experience of ME, because it is it's an incredible teacher, isn't it? As you say, you learned patience, and you know you've learned a lot having gone through it about how you can help people to avoid going, you know, down the same road, really.
Yes, I mean, I use it quite a lot both when I'm coaching and when I'm training, to get people to stop and think about themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be simple things like, well, you know, what if you had to stop work tomorrow because you're ill? And it wouldn't necessarily, not necessarily ME, it could be any illness, any long-term illness.
Yeah.
You know, what is the impact on your life? Are you ready for that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's great. It's been great talking to you and finding out, you know, about your journey. And it certainly must have been tough, as I say, in the 80s when it was so misunderstood and so, you know, dismissed, really, with the yuppie flu label.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult enough to cope with without that. But finally, what tips could you share, sort of would you like to share to help those people listening today who are on their own recovery journey?
I would say there is light at the end of the tunnel. that because it is so much better understood now than it was when I had it, that yes, it can take time, but allow yourself that time and, you know, allow yourself to learn to listen to your body, because that's just so valuable. Attitude helps a lot. And I know it can be really, really difficult when you're feeling down, and it can have quite a down effect on your morale and your libido and all sorts of things. But if you can adopt a positive attitude, that can really, really help. You know, talk to other people who've been through it, who've been there, who understand, because they will help you get out the other side.
Oh, that's great. Well, it is, isn't it? It's always about talk to the ones who are where you want to be.
Yes.
You know, I'm a great one for, I have a problem with support groups and online support groups where people have, you know, they do have, tend to have a bit of a pity party. It's much better to talk to somebody that's overcome what you've gone through and can, you know, can give you some pointers just like you have there. So thanks very much for sharing that. Just before we sort of wrap up, I know your work is very much about inspiring others, and you've also sort of told me about the fact that you work a lot in coaching and helping people to recognise, you know, what might be stressing their system and how to overcome it. Is there anything you'd like to tell us about what you're doing at the moment, and to sort of share what your, you know, your work at the moment with anybody?
Yes, thank you. I work with both individuals and teams. Helping them overcome issues that they maybe have, maybe things that are limiting beliefs, things that hold them back. When I go into organisations, there are often what I call organisational norms. Yes. And it can be quite difficult to see past them sometimes. So I will work with, as I say, both individuals within organisations and also with teams in organisations, and get them to look outside the boundaries. So this is, for example, what we do when we do the experiential training. You know, we get people and throw them into a situation where they've got to cook a three-course meal for each other. We get them to be actors for a day, and they have to play drama games and put themselves in situations they wouldn't normally put themselves in. And it's amazing how many light bulb moments you get. When people say, oh, I know, actually, I could, that's different. I could do something differently.
Yeah.
So those are the things that I get really quite excited about. You know, I love talking to people about the sorts of things that we do there. And there's more about that on our website. You know, we invite people to go and look at, it's www.jam, that's J-A-M for mother, berry.co.uk, find out a bit more about it there.
Well, that's great, Berry. That's brilliant. So yes, so if you think that that's going to be of help to you, then, you know, go and have a look at that website. And you know, it may well be that you're working as part of a company that definitely need to look outside the box and start to do things differently, because I think that's a lot of the reason why people do stop enjoying their job as well, when they don't feel that they're really being listened to, or they've got a say, and things are just being done the way they've always been done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's being able to say, well, hang on a minute, let's just stop and have a look at this.
Yeah, and if everyone feels that you know, they're making a contribution, people will support that which they help to create, won't they?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, it's been lovely talking to you, Berry. Thank you so much for your time today. We'll obviously put the website details into this session, so don't worry if you've not jotted it down or whatever. We'll put it into the session so that you can catch up with it in with the written content. And lovely to hear your story. Thank you for sharing it and for sharing your top tips today. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you very much. It was good to speak to you too.
Okay, bye.
Bye.